Hello, this is Mona. Welcome to this edition of the Didcot, Abingdon and Wantage talking newspaper Dawn, recorded on Wednesday the 3rd of April 2024. You'll hear news items from the Herald series and other local papers, and as usual at the end of the news there will be some items of general interest, particularly from us this week, and from the RNIB magazine selection. Our readers this week are Maggie, Sandra K and Sandra F and myself. I am the editor, and our recording and copying technician is John, and in the office we have Karen. This week we have a variety of news items covering Easter celebrations to archaeology, and we start our news this week with the feature on the Maundy money tradition.
Hello, this is Maggie. Church Warden presented Maundy money by Queen. A member of the Diocese of Oxford has taken part in a Royal Maundy service at Worcester Cathedral. Queen Camilla presented the Maundy money to Catherine Hitchens from Fifield near Abingdon. Miss Hitchens is one of three people from the Diocese of Oxford to receive the honour. The Queen stepped in for King Charles, who was due to attend but stepped back from public-facing duties after his cancer diagnosis. Recipients of the Maundy money are chosen for their significant and dedicated Christian service to their communities and churches. The number of recipients is the same as the monarch's age. Each recipient receives two small leather purses. One is white and holds coins to the value in pence of the monarch's age, while the other is red and contains a special £5 and a unique 50 pence. This year, 75 men and 75 women were selected. Miss Hitchens, a church warden who frequently leads services at her church, said, "First of all, I thought it was a mistake. It is incredible, and I still don't really understand it when I look around and see what other people do. I just try to live a quiet life in the village, doing what I can." Miss Hitchens has also spearheaded and coordinated necessary repair works for her church, raising funds in the process. She has supported her community's village hall by raising funds for its repair and maintenance. This autumn, Miss Hitchens is launching a monthly group for children in her village called Little Fishes. Miss Hitchens also serves as the lay chair of the Deanery Synod, a meeting of representatives of 30 Church of England parishes in the Chipping Norton area. She participates in local government as Fifield Parish Meeting Chairman and is a founding member of the Oxfordshire Stronger Communities Alliance. The practice of giving Maundy money, one of the oldest royal traditions, dating to at least 600 AD, used to involve monarchs giving money to those in need and washing the feet of their poorer subjects. The first record of the practice taking place in this country dates back to 1213. Its significance is rooted in the biblical story of Jesus washing the feet of his disciples at the Last Supper.
Hello, this is Sandra Kay. New school opens up with sculpture reveal and VIPs. A school in Grove has been officially opened at an event which saw more than 80 people in attendance. Oxfordshire's Lord Lieutenant, Marjorie Neesom Glasgow, unveiled a sculpture commissioned to mark the opening of St John's C of E Primary Academy. This was funded by Persimmon Homes and crafted by sculptor Sharon Rich and symbolises the aspirations of the new school and the community it seeks to serve. After the opening speeches, guests enjoyed a tour of the new facilities, concluding with a performance by the reception children. Beth Taylor, Chair of the Board of Trustees, said, "This is a very happy day for everyone at the Vale Academy Trust. It's an absolute pleasure to be able to mark the opening of St John C of E Academy with children and teachers, friends and colleagues, as well as our distinguished guests. This school, at the heart of the new Wellington Gate community, offers a different and exciting model for education, combining the prospect of continuity from nursery through to GCSE, with the extraordinary commitment to a nurturing, inclusive vision that we see in all our Church of England schools. Officials from Oxfordshire County Council and Grove Parish Council, representatives from the Department for Education and the Mayor of Wantage were among the attendees. Also in attendance was the County Council's Cabinet Member for Children, Education and Young People, John Howson. He was joined by County Councillors Jenny Hannaby and Jane Hannah, Wantage and Didcot MP David Johnson, as well as the Vale Academy Trust, which partnered with Oxfordshire County Council in delivering the new school. Kerry Cottrell, the head of school, added, "It's great to stand in our beautiful school that has steadily grown and come alive with learning and laughter. The journey to this moment has been nothing short of extraordinary and is down to our exceptional team, our amazing children and families, and our supportive community." Executive head teacher Rick Holroyd added, "When St John C of E Secondary School is built, we will be a single school with a common vision and values, and this is already central to our planning. We intend to develop a school with the aspiration for every individual to grow in wisdom and character, to flourish in a vibrant community, to fly beyond expectations whilst living life in all its fullness." Daughters of the late Stanley Hall, after whom the school's address, Stanley Hall Road, is named, also attended the event. Mr. Hall, a committed Christian and community stalwart, was fondly remembered for his dedication to youth activities.
Hello, this is Sandra F. Work set to begin on new slip roads for the A34 junction. County councillors have welcomed progress on a new A34 junction scheme, which will remove traffic from Abingdon town centre. The junction at Lodge Hill currently has north-facing slip roads, but the scheme will add new south-facing slip roads, as well as making cycling and walking easier and safer in the area. Adding the south-facing slip roads will remove traffic from the town centre, as some drivers will no longer have to travel through it to access the A34 southbound at the Marcham interchange. Oxfordshire County Council has now entered into a grant funding agreement with Homes England to secure £17.3 million towards the cost of the scheme. The County Council has also signed a contract with Balfour Beatty for the design and construction of the scheme. Abingdon North County Councillor Nathan Lay said, "People in Abingdon have waited far too long for this scheme to happen, and it's great that we are finally at this point with all the permissions and funding in place. It's also good that we now have the contractors signed up for the design and build and ready to crack on from later this year. We want to encourage people to travel around town for local journeys by sustainable means where possible, such as walking and cycling. Part of enabling this means reducing traffic through the centre of town by adding in the missing slip roads. Detailed design has already begun with construction of the local traffic calming works and the lay-by upgrades to the A34 expected to start later this year. The main construction of the two new south-facing A34 slip roads is anticipated to start in autumn 2024, lasting approximately 2 years. Abingdon South County Councillor Neil Fawcett said it was brilliant that work could now start to create the new slip roads. He added, There will be some disruption for drivers, but I know the contractors will do everything they can to avoid disruption to traffic on the A34 itself. Once the work has been completed, it will reduce congestion in the town centre and make it a much more enjoyable environment. Judy Roberts, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Infrastructure and Development Strategy, said securing funding from Homes England and appointing a design and build contractor represented major milestones for the project. She added, "The council is now in a strong position to accelerate towards construction. This project has been in development for a long time and is much needed and wanted by the residents of Abingdon. The council will work in partnership with Balfour Beatty to satisfy the planning conditions as soon as practicably possible, as well as working with National Highways to agree the design and construction methodology, followed by construction of the new A34 slip roads." Pauline Schaefer, Director of Infrastructure Funding at Homes England, said, "Our multi-million pound funding will provide strategic transport infrastructure, unlocking 820 homes in North Abingdon and supporting wider housing and economic growth in the area. We are committed to working with ambitious local authority partners seeking to meet their local housing needs through delivery of key infrastructure."
Hello, this is Mona again. There's a rise in need for debt relief help reported over the county. The number of people in Oxfordshire accessing a debt relief scheme open to provide financial support during the coronavirus pandemic has risen by more than a tenth last year, new figures show. Across England and Wales, there was a 25% jump in the number of people registering for breathing space from debt last year. Debt relief charity Step Change said the rise is encouraging, with the scheme successfully delivering good outcomes for people facing financial difficulty. A standard breathing space application is available to people with problem debt and gives legal protections from creditor action for up to 60 days. They can be entered into once a year. People can also apply for a mental health breathing space, which lasts the duration of their mental health treatment plus 30 days. Figures from the Insolvency Service show 676 people in Oxfordshire registered for a standard or mental health breathing space in 2023, which was up from 586 the year before. It meant the breathing space rate was 11.5% per 10,000 adults in the area. Simon Trevithick, head of communications at Step Change, said, "It's encouraging to see more people taking advantage of breathing space before accessing insolvency. Since its inception, the scheme has been successful in delivering good outcomes for people facing financial difficulty. It reduces the pressure of a stressful situation when someone is dealing with multiple debts and gives them the space to fully engage with debt advice to regain control of their finances and get back on track. Our research indicates improved well-being for our clients who have entered a breathing space, including sleeping better and worrying less about the debts. Breathing spaces were introduced in May 2021 to help people facing financial difficulties because of the coronavirus pandemic. More than 200,000 total breathing spaces have been registered since the inception of the scheme. They have seen a national drop in the number of people formally going financially insolvent, which includes bankruptcy, debt relief orders, and voluntary arrangements." A Treasury spokesperson said, "The government remains committed to supporting people in problem debt and continues to fund debt advice at record levels in England. At the spring budget, we made it easier for people to access vital debt relief by scrapping the £90 admin fee for a debt relief order and changing the criteria so that more people can get the help they need to get their finances back on track."
Councils make pledge to buy local goods. Councils have promised to do more to support businesses within their communities by buying local. South Oxfordshire and Vale of Whitehorse District Councils have pledged allegiance to Oxfordshire Inclusive Economy Partnerships Charter. The agreement will ensure council contracts assess the potential support a supplier can provide to the community and consider value for money. Councillor Neil Fawcett of Vale of Whitehorse District Council said, "These pledges show we are committed to creating a more equal and sustainable community that benefits everyone. We hope being part of the Charter will create more opportunities and benefit everyone. The Council will look to buy more from local organisations where possible, including small and medium enterprises, social enterprises and cooperatives." Robin Bennett, South Oxfordshire District Council Cabinet Member for Economic Development and Regeneration, said, "By looking to buy from local organisations first, we aim to reduce our carbon footprint while better supporting suppliers in the area to bid for council contracts and boosting the local economy. We'll also be supporting our staff to volunteer at local community projects, which we hope will enable them to build new skills and links with their communities."
Plan ahead to cast votes in May elections. With elections on the way in May, voters have only 4 weeks left to apply for a free voter authority certificate if they don't have ID. Available to voters unable to provide a passport, driving licence or bus pass, the Voter Authority Certificate Scheme aims to ensure everyone has access to an accepted form of voter ID. The deadline for applications is April the 24th at 5 p.m. More than 16,000 people have already successfully applied, and applications can be submitted online or via completion of a paper form. Voters will need to provide a photo, their full name, date of birth, the address at which they are registered to vote, and their national insurance number. Applicants must be registered to vote before applying. The upcoming local elections in England on May the 2nd will mark the first time that photo ID is required in many areas. Jackie Killeen, Director of Electoral Administration and Guidance at the Electoral Commission, said, "Voters will be required to show photo ID at polling stations at the May elections, but we know not everyone has ID they can take with them. Anyone who currently doesn't have the ID they need can apply for a free voter authority certificate, but they must apply before the deadline so that they can cast their vote in May."
Water bills shoot up by 12%. Thames water bills have risen by an average of 12.1% after a steep increase came in this week, the company has confirmed. The increases to household bills are part of Thames Water's revenue recovery permitted by the industry regulator Ofwat. Thames Water's average annual household water bills are £255 for 2024 to 25, above average for the industry and the fourth highest of any water company. However, Thames Water's new average annual household sewerage bills are among the lowest at just £216, according to Water UK, which publishes the bills for all companies. Thames Water's typical unmeasured combined services bill is £571, up from £509 in the previous year, an increase of 12.1%. This includes inflation adjustments for allowed revenue recovery, adjustments for company performance, and changes to its customer base. A Thames Water spokesperson said, "Investing in our services and providing support to customers with their bills is incredibly important to us. While charges for this year will increase, We recognise that we need to continue to improve overall customer experience, and we have a refocused 3-year turnaround plan to deliver a step change in our performance across our network.
Council tips late night waste service to be stopped. Oxfordshire's waste recycling centres will no longer stay open late on Thursday nights. Previously, the 7 centres managed by Oxfordshire County Council stayed open until 8 p.m. every Thursday from April through to September. Councillor Pete Sudbury, Deputy Leader of Oxfordshire County Council, said, "We realise this decision will disappoint some people, but unfortunately it's not financially viable to keep it going. However, users should remember that all of our household waste recycling centres will remain open from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. 7 days a week, 362 days a year, to meet everybody's waste and recycling needs. This change is a result of the financial strains faced by Oxfordshire County Council in providing waste management services. Councils can no longer charge for the disposal of small quantities of DIY waste. Meanwhile, costs have doubled for disposing of persistent organic pollutants, often found in upholstered furniture, after these materials were banned from being placed in landfill. These changes equate to a £1 million annual increase in costs, compelling the council to find savings elsewhere. Full details of the county's household waste recycling centre sites and the services available can be found on Oxfordshire County Council's website. The Waste Wizard tool and curbside collections and services offered by council also provide options for waste recycling.
Wildlife rescuers fear their future unless home found. An animal charity, which has seen a boom in demand for its 24-hour rescue service, says it may close if it can't find a new home by October. Oxfordshire Wildlife Rescue has launched a fundraiser after being told by landlords they will need to leave its rented land in Blueberry due to uncertainties with the future of the farm. The charity, which rescues around 3,000 creatures every year, has found a patch of land which ticks all the boxes but needs to raise £250,000 to secure it. The charity, which was founded by Luke and Ruth Vaklavec, outgrew their family home in Didcot and expanded into the site at Blueberry in 2020. The organisation, which once treated 30 animals annually, now deals with thousands of voles, toads, swifts, garden birds and hedgehogs, as well as foxes, owls and deer, most of which are found by concerned members of the public each year. The animal rescue charity has nearly reached the halfway mark of its £250,000 target. Mr. Vaklavec said, "If we don't find a new home, the reality is that Oxfordshire Wildlife Rescue will probably cease to exist. We need to buy our own land. If we cannot do that, the charity will no longer be able to help not just our amazing but threatened wildlife, but the thousands of members of the public who turn to us for help or advice when they find an animal in need. Wildlife matters. And now our mission is to ensure that we can keep this vital service not only continuous, but to expand, develop and ensure a legacy for future generations to come. There has never been a registered wildlife hospital in Oxfordshire. We would like to change that," he said, adding he'd like to open the first and only wildlife hospital in the county, complete with on-site veterinary care, educational and public facilities that enable everyone to connect with nature and the environment. Last summer, the charity was called for help on average every 25 minutes and received between 7 to 15 dear road traffic casualties a day, he said. This spring, the team has already rescued a roe deer, which was suffering from fly strike caused by green bottle flies, which can induce toxic shock and can kill an animal if not treated quickly. After meticulously combing out hundreds and hundreds of larvae and eggs, the deer was given fluids and painkillers, and the team could only hope that he made it through the night. His throat was so swollen with an infection he couldn't eat, and ambulance coordinator Sarah Jane created a special deer smoothie with the most nutritious and immune-boosting ingredients. 3 days later, his eyes were beginning to open, the swelling was hugely decreased, and he was feeling well enough to try and break through the shed when he was offered his afternoon painkillers. A week later, he was well enough for release. Last September, the Wildlife Centre, which was presented with the Environmental Award by Didcot Town Council, hit a setback and had to put out a distress call when its centre was flooded 6 inches deep during heavy rainfall. The charity had been given 100 empty sandbags by Vauxhall Barracks, and it issued a desperate plea over social media for sand to fill them with. "Urgent help," it said in another tweet. "Our centre is flooding. Water inside is 6 inches deep and rising quickly." Mr. Vaclavek said, "Never in the history of OWR have I been so grateful and proud of our team." He added, "Because of you, years of dedication and work have been preserved and with little collateral damage."
Families' anguish as graves of children left vandalised. Families have spoken of their anguish after ornaments on their children's graves have been repeatedly vandalised. Thames Valley Police revealed there had been 2 incidents within the last month when graves were left damaged at Beringsfield Burial Ground. Now they want people to come forward if they know of any other incidents. And families who have been affected say they hope the culprit is arrested. The parish council, which runs the cemetery, says it has passed CCTV footage to police. Kerry Hawkins, 43, said she was left heartbroken after the grave of her baby daughter, Sheanne Hawkins, was vandalised. Sheanne was stillborn 23 years ago. Miss Hawkins, who has a grown-up son and 2 teenage daughters, said her whole family was upset that ornaments on her daughter's grave had been vandalised for the 2nd year in a row. There was a similar spate of vandalism in the graveyard about 12 months ago. Miss Hawkins, who now lives in Rose Hill, said, "I keep my daughter's grave at Beringsfield immaculate, and she rested peacefully there until last year, when ornaments on her grave got smashed up. Now it has happened again, and to see a loved one's resting place like this is soul-destroying." Miss Hawkins said you could see the boot marks where the ornaments had been trampled. "I think whoever did it must have disturbed about 30 graves. It will cost us at least a couple of £100 to replace what's damaged, and I think whoever did this should be arrested." Sally Willoughby of Beringsfield had been leaving birthday flowers at the grave of son Joby, who died aged 2 months in 2009 from health complications. Ornaments at Joby's grave were damaged last year, and the vandalism has been repeated this year. Miss Willoughby said, "This time birthday flowers were kicked everywhere and ornaments smashed to smithereens. I'm heartbroken. If anyone else has been affected, they should report it to the police." Thames Valley Police said, "It has sadly come to our attention that someone has been damaging graves within the Beringsfield Cemetery. We are now aware of at least 2 separate incidents this month, whereby at least 4 graves have been damaged. We're keen to find out who is responsible, so we're appealing for any information in relation to these incidents, and urge anyone who has experienced any damage to a loved one's grave, contact us to report it. Those with information are asked to quote the crime reference number 432-442-401-191-166. Annette Loveland, clerk to Beresfield Parish Council, said, "Sadly, it was ornaments and floral tributes on graves in the burial ground that were damaged. The vehicular gates at the burial ground are always locked unless access is required by contractors or for a funeral. The pedestrian access gate to the burial ground is locked at 7 p.m. from October to April and at 9 p.m. from May to September. The pedestrian gate is unlocked each day at 7 a.m. Images from the CCTV cameras have been passed to Thames Valley Police."
Charity overwhelmed by response to Easter appeal. A charity set up to support children's good causes says its members were overwhelmed with the response to its Easter appeal, which saw it distribute more than 1,230 eggs to youngsters. Play to Give, a Didcot charity with a focus on children's health and disability causes, made its 4th annual appeal 2 months ago, with the aim of collecting and distributing chocolate treats to underprivileged children and young patients at Oxford Children's Hospital. Supporters from Oxford, Abingdon, Wallingford, Whitney and Didcot all contributed, with businesses, cafes, shops and various city institutions also lending their support. This year has seen a surge in the number of donations compared to last year, with 2023's total of 600 more than doubled. Around 400 eggs made their way to the Oxford Children's Hospital, including the children's ward at the Horton General in Banbury. The charity's founder, Andrew Baker, started the organisation in 2007 after having his life saved twice, once at birth after being born with a brain injury, and again aged 12 with brain surgery. He said, "Along with the Easter Bunny, we worked our way excitedly through the mountain of Easter eggs to deliver to spread some cheer and joy. The fantastic kindness of all those who donated brought plenty of smiles to the faces of all those who received the generosity." A few other institutions also benefited from Play to Give's efforts. Among them were siblings and families of babies being cared for in the neonatal care unit at the John Radcliffe Hospital, as well as residents at Viking House, Helen and Douglas House and Sobel House Hospice. The number of donations also allowed the group to extend their efforts to the Didcot Food Bank and the Home Start Southern Oxfordshire. Since its inception, Play to Give has contributed more than £115,000 in funds to the Oxford Children's Hospital. The charity will be hosting its 13th football tournament and 5th gala ball this year, among other activities, to continue raising funds for children, health and disability-focused endeavours. Mr. Baker added, "It was an uplifting, joyful but emotional experience too, visiting the hospital and hospices. We're always grateful for the incredible and heartwarming support our communities show Play to Give, and we share our enormous thanks to everyone who took the time to donate to this appeal, which continues to help us do fantastic work to help so many in our community all year round in changing, transforming and saving lives." On top of their annual Easter egg appeal, the charity is encouraging more people to get involved with their projects and initiatives. For more information about Play to Give and its upcoming events, visit the charity's website.
The county's special schools are left overcrowded, figures say. Several special schools in Oxfordshire were over capacity last academic year, new figures show. Data from the Department of Education shows that nearly two-thirds of special schools were full or overcrowded across England, with a union warning a lack of funding is letting children down. The figures show 7 of the 15 special schools in Oxfordshire were over capacity in the 22-23 school year. Across England, 63% of 1,077 special schools had at least met capacity, with around 4,000 more pupils than places. The Department for Education said this may be a result of the way capacity has been measured, which doesn't take account of the type of need. Rob Williams, senior policy advisor at School Leaders Union NAHT, said the figures represent a complete mismatch between the needs of these children and the funding available to schools and local authorities. He said there are simply not enough special schools for people who need more specialist support. Many children are therefore instead being placed in mainstream schools, which may themselves be over capacity and may not have the staff, expertise or resources needed to offer the best possible education and support. Mr. Williams urged increased funding for children with special educational needs. Earlier this month, Education Secretary Gillian Keegan admitted to school and college leaders the government had not done enough for these children. Speaking to the Association of School and College Leaders annual conference, Ms. Keegan said, "If you look at special educational needs, we haven't built enough special educational needs places or schools." Addressing the same conference, Shadow Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson said the challenge facing children with special educational needs or disability was enormous, and it would take time for Labour to turn that around. The figures further show nearly a quarter of state secondary schools across England were full or overcrowded, largely unchanged from a year before. In Oxfordshire, 8 of 41 schools were at or above capacity. Meanwhile, 17% of primary schools across the country were facing the same issue, with 21 of them in Oxfordshire. In the spring budget, the Chancellor promised £105 million over the next 4 years to build more than a dozen new special free schools. The Treasury said it would create more than 2,000 additional places for children with SEND, special needs, in England. And Warner yet again with the notice board this time, which will be followed by more news items. I'll start by just saying that there are no birthdays to celebrate this week, but I have got some announcements that the following people have sadly died. Gladys Bellis on the 21st of March, aged 94. Marion Clayton on the 24th of March, aged 89. Jack Dreyer on the 9th of March, aged 84. Richard George in March, aged 95 years. Raymond Herman on March the 20th. Mick Middleton on the 15th of March, aged 85. Harold Swanborough on the 13th of March, aged 89. And Jeff Williams on the 12th of March, aged 87. Of course, our thoughts and prayers are very much with their families and friends. So that's the end of the notice board. And we continue with an article about the Grove Roman Villa.
Roman villa site is remarkable find. A remarkable Roman villa has been discovered by archaeologists in an Oxfordshire village. Archaeologists from the Red River Archaeology Group discovered the villa complex by working on a housing development in Grove. The Brookside Meadows site sits on a landscape inhabited since the Bronze Age and includes the villa complex. This is richly decorated with painted plaster and mosaics and a monumental hall-like aisled building with hints of internal colonnades. The artifact-rich site was long-lived, with Roman activity extending from the 1st or 2nd centuries into the late 4th or perhaps even the early 5th century AD. Finds include painted plaster inclusive of floral motifs, mosaic tesserae, hypocaust box flue tiles, a complex brickwork floor, and miniature votive axes. There was also Samian-style red-slip tableware, hundreds of coins, rings, and brooches, as well as a horse-headed belt buckle dating to AD 350 to 450. Several tightly coiled lead scrolls that recall Roman curse tablets were also discovered, which, when viewed with the axes, suggests a ritual focus somewhere on the estate. A huge hall-like aisled building, which seems to date from the late 1st century AD, was also a major find on the site. To date, four huge potential columns for an internal colonnade have been uncovered in the aisled building, which is one of the larger examples of its type in Britain. This building is immediately adjacent to a winged corridor villa, a high-status domestic structure with a central range and flanking wings of rooms accessed by a central corridor. Louis Stafford, senior project manager at Red River Archaeology Group, said, "The sheer size of the buildings that still survive and the richness of goods recovered suggest this was a dominant feature in the locality, if not the wider landscape." Francesca Giarelli, a project officer with the archaeological outfit, said, "The site is far more complex than a regular rural site and clearly was an important centre of activities for a long time, from the Bronze Age to the later Roman period." The housing development is being overseen by Barrett and David Wilson Holmes and will see several two-bedroom apartments and three, four and five-bedroomed houses erected. Barrett and David Wilson Holmes have worked with the archaeologists in the early stages of its developments, allowing experts to carry out excavations in sites of interest. The company's managing director, Campbell Gregg, said, "It's remarkable to think that we are simply the latest in a line of people who have established a community on this site, dating back such a long way."
Now, two Easter Bunny stories. Step into Easter. Morris dancers entertained as they danced around Star Wars, Stormtroopers, and the Easter Bunny. Abingdon Traditional Morris performed in the town's marketplace as part of an Easter extravaganza. The group is set to perform next on Sunday, April the 21st, at Folk Weekend, Oxford. And treasure hunting fun with Easter Bunny. Easter came early for a community in Farringdon, with more than 20 children taking part in a treasure hunt. Taking place at Bewley Home's Belmont View development, the event gave children the chance to win Easter eggs. Farringdon resident and organiser Shelley Breakspear said, "Our treasure hunt was very well attended and the children had a lot of fun finding the clues that revealed an Easter-related phrase. Thank you to Bewley for donating all the prizes for the children. Belmont View is a fantastic place for children to grow up and enjoy an outdoors lifestyle. A big thank you to fellow residents Linda Nuttall and Lindsay Dunstan, who played a big part in organising the event. Elaine Stratford, Sales and Marketing Director of Bewley Home, said, "It was heartwarming to see this new community come together to organise this Easter hunt for all the children who live here. The Easter hunt is a small way for us to contribute to the joy and sense of community at Belmont View."
Wargamers face off in day full of big little skirmishes. Soldiers squared off and armies clashed for a day of conflict and combat on a miniature scale. Wargaming fans gathered at an Oxfordshire college for a battle of wits and strategy. But while the hunger for victory was formidable, those doing the fighting were no bigger than your thumb. Attracting enthusiasts from far and wide, the Overlord show at Abingdon and Witney College saw players face off for skirmishes themed on campaigns throughout history. Gamers enjoyed intricate reproductions of scenes and struggles evoking everything from Roman Europe to feudal Japan and Napoleonic sea battles to the Spanish Civil War. Others fought frays in Tolkien-esque fantasy worlds of goblins and dragons, in post-apocalyptic wastelands, or in outer space. And it all looked tremendous fun. The annual show, organised by the Abingdon War Games Club, also featured displays of intricate models and gaming sets and scores of stalls at which aficionados stocked up on figures, rule books, and the fine craft equipment which allows devotees of this secret world to fashion their fabulously detailed creations. Model kits offered accurate depictions of warriors of every era. Overlord is a shopfront for the hobby of wargaming, said show organiser Steve Evans, who has been battling for 50 years. The club has been going for 30 years and is going strong. We put on the show to bring traders and wargamers together and to put on games for them to enjoy. He welcomed the variety of games on offer and the huge imagination and creativity on show. You can think of any conflict from history, from land, air or sea, and someone will have made models and games representing it. And everything is rule-based, relating to how each side would have acted. Devotees came from as far as Wales, some just to pick up figures or new games. The show attracts people from all over the place, he adds. Some play, others come to collect. And he says it brings in funds to help support the club, which boasts about 40 members. And what is the attraction of the pastime? Imagination and creativity, he says. But it's also about interacting with people with similar interests and the chance to keep on learning.
Car washing to help firefighters. A fire station car wash has raised hundreds of pounds for a charity which supports current and retired firefighters. Abingdon Fire Station's car wash raised £576.39 for the firefighters' charity on March the 16th. The station crew said, "We had a lot of fun meeting you all and giving your cars a good clean." The car wash was open from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Bicester Fire Station also held a car wash the same day, with the station's cadets getting involved. The Firefighters Charity supports current and retired firefighters with their mental and physical health and their social needs. Abingdon Fire Station gave a huge thank you to everyone who brought their car along.
A war veteran turns 101 with party week. A Second World War veteran who lives near Abingdon has celebrated his 101st birthday. Sydney Jesse Clark, who goes by the name Nobby, enjoyed a week of birthday celebrations and two separate lunches with friends. Mr. Clark had a family gathering at the doghouse, Frilford Heath, with his daughter Anne Webber and grandchildren Mark and Sharon. He also went on his tricycle to a pub to meet with his friends. Mr. Clark, a retiree from Lucy Company in Walton Well Road, Oxford, was invited to attend the 2024 Lucy Electric Technology Day. The event was held on March 26 at the Silverstone Conference and Exhibition Centre, offering a glimpse into innovative energy technology for future generations. He is the company's Gold Watch oldest retiree having served the company for more than 30 years. Mr. Clark met Richard Dick, chairman of Lucy Group, and John Griffith, CEO of Lucy Electric. Born in Tackley in 1923, Mr. Clark then moved with his family to Killingworth Castle Public House in Woodstock. He worked at Lucy's Ironworks in Jericho and joined the Navy in the Second World War. He returned to the ironworks afterwards, where he met his wife, Barbara. Mr. Clark lived in Jericho for more than 60 years. In 2012, he moved to Wootton to be closer to his daughter and grandchildren.
Pupils help sick woman. Four school pupils have been honoured with awards for bravery after aiding an unconscious woman. David Johnson MP for Wantage and Didcot presented Local Hero Awards at the Hendred C of E School. Year 6 pupils Toby Cockett, George McDermott, Alfie Nechigiri and Evelyn Atkins were playing in a park when they found an unconscious woman and acted quickly to find help. Head teacher Lisa Rees said, "Thank you to David Johnson MP for recognising the bravery of Toby, George, Alfie and Evelyn. They went out of their way to assist a person in need of help and are a great example to other pupils." Mr. Johnson said, "I was delighted to present well-deserved Local Hero Awards. Thanks to their quick thinking and bravery, they managed to secure help for someone."
Children learn story of Easter at church event. More than 500 children have taken part in an event designed to help them understand the Easter story. Trinity Learning's Experience Easter event, held both in Trinity Church in Abingdon and online, ran from March the 12th to the 21st. 7 to 11-year-olds expressed their hopes and dreams by writing on palm crosses and vented their angry and fearful thoughts using plasticine. Nicola Williams, Trinity Learning's Education Development Officer, said, "Experience Easter is a key annual event for us and the many dedicated volunteers who support us in preparing and running the workshops. We have had some fantastic feedback from school staff about how engaging and fun the children found the event, and it's wonderful to be able to share the Easter story in a calm and relaxed atmosphere. The event is part of Trinity Learning's aim to alleviate pressures on busy schools via tailor-made activities."
Fashion fans are invited into a palace. Blenheim Palace has unveiled the largest exhibition in its 300-year history, celebrating Britain's famous fashion designers. Icons of British Fashion will run until June the 30th. Leading designers, including Alice Templey, Stella McCartney, and the late Dame Vivienne Westwood, contributed to the show, sponsored by luxury retail destination Vista Village. Visitors are welcome onto a red carpet that leads to displays featuring designs from Bruce Oldfield, Zandra Rhodes, Barbara, and Terry de Havilland. Lulu Guinness is among the designers with unique items made for the palace. The palace's own collections are interspersed with display rooms celebrating each fashion icon, providing visitors with photo opportunities throughout the event. To pay tribute to the 150th anniversary of Sir Winston Churchill's birth, the palace worked with some designers to celebrate the wartime Prime Minister, who was, of course, born at the Woodstock Palace. The exhibition features a Churchill siren suit lent by Turnbull and Asser, and a new take on the boiler suit, along with a smoking cap designed by Stephen Jones featuring Churchill's hand-embroidered initials and a clementine, which is a nod to his wife, sewn into the lining. Dominic Hare, chief executive of Blenheim Palace, said, "It is an honour to welcome the work and creativity of some of the most iconic fashion labels of our time to Blenheim Palace. The whole team here have worked tirelessly to bring to life what has been years in the making, to ensure the exhibition is hugely exciting and captivating experience for our visitors. We have a rich fashion history, and this exhibition should help cement our legacy in this fascinating industry. Christian Dior is among designers whose work has been showcased at the Palace, with two shows for the Red Cross in 1954 and 1958, and returning in 2016 for a cruise collection. A Bicester Village spokesman said, "Our sponsorship signifies Bicester Village's commitment to homegrown talent, including British design icons found within our own stable of luxury boutiques, such as Vivienne Westwood, Barbour and Stella McCartney." Admission to Icons of British Fashion is with any Blenheim Palace ticket. Visitors receive a complimentary styling appointment at Bicester Village, providing style advice and recommendations. For additional information or to book tickets, visit the Blenheim Palace website.
Road to How We Reached Our Modern Highways and Streets. David Taylor of Didcot and District Archaeological and History Society writes, "It's been 6 years since my last article on roadways of Didcot, and in that time the town's population has once again increased, with the new development of Valley Park being constructed on the side of the A4130 Link Road. As we now know, even in this space of time, the infrastructure which should go part and parcel with a development of this size has not been delivered by the house builders. The increase of traffic on the Broadway has become very noticeable, often taking some time to find a gap in the traffic to cross the road. But if we go back in time, our predecessors would have had no problem in crossing this roadway, with no motor traffic and just a few horse-drawn farm carts. We're talking about a time before the 16th Century Enclosure Act, which fenced off vast tracts of grazing land used by the commoners in the village of Dudcote. Dudcote was just a sleepy little village lying close to the York Berkshire Downs, with cottages for the mainly farm labourers who resided there. The main centre of the old village straddled what is now Foxhall Road, Lydall's Road and Brasenose Road today, with the Church of All Saints at its centre. This meant that the settlement was to the north of the only main road, which ran between Wallingford, 6 miles to the east, and Wantage, 8 miles in a westerly direction. This was the King's Highway at the time. If you wished to travel to Wantage, you would have gone through Harwell, which was, at the time, a bigger settlement than Dudcote. Travelling north, you would have found the muddy track through the hamlet of Vauxhall to North Fields, which was common grazing land that, many years later, would be cut through by the building of the railway line from Didcot to Oxford, and, much later, by the construction of the Ladygrove Estate. In front of you then was Appleford Common, with Durnall's Farm, where many years later the Army Ordnance Depot was to be built. And from there the village of Appleford was straight ahead, or you could turn left onto the track to Sutton Courtenay, or right towards both Long and Little Wittenham. Back to the village of Dudcote, following the line of what is now Lydall's Road, would take you to Haddon Wood, which we know today as Haddon Hill, and, as today, is high ground above the marshland where Ladygrove Farm could be found. To the south of the King's Highway, now called Broadway, was the parish of Hagbourne. You would come across East and West Hagbourne fields with the settlements of Coscote, Scotland's Ash, East Hagbourne and West Hagbourne to the south of these fields. Venturing even further afield, you would find Upton, Blueberry, Aston Upthorpe and Aston Tyrold.
Clay Exploring Fascists' Life, set for Arts Centre. A play centred on a British fascist leader is coming to Oxford and Didcot. Draining the Swamp is touring from April the 17th to the 25th and will be at Cornerstone Arts Centre in Didcot on April the 17th and Oxford Playhouse on April the 20th. The performance explores Oswald Mosley's life and actions during the 1930s and 40s alongside contemporary world issues. Highlighting the rise of populism, far-right politics in Europe, and the anti-democratic pronouncements of Donald Trump, it offers a commentary on current political discourse. Created by writer and actor Roland D. Hill, the production is delivered by the company for DRH Arts. It's directed by David Furlong and designed by artist Jeffrey Choi. The cast includes five actors portraying the roles of Oswald Mosley, his wife Diana, Simmy Mosley, and William Joyce, among other characters. Roland D. Hill said, "Over the last few years, there's been an increasing return to nationalistic politics and to popular support for extremist politicians who appear to place little store on democracy. This piece, focusing on Mosley, the personality, is intended both as a warning and to raise questions about the appropriate way for liberalism to challenge the brick wall mentality of populist movements." The play has received high praise, with Counterculture UK dubbing it an incisive exploration of the rise of fascism, and One for Review describing it as a first-class piece of historical theatre.
Actors to stage a comedy inspired by Shakespeare. Amateur actors are set to stage an absurdist tragicomedy based on a Shakespeare play later this month. Tom Stoppard's Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead will be performed by Abingdon Drama Club at the town's Unicorn Theatre from April the 17th to the 20th. The play revolves around two minor characters from Shakespeare's Hamlet, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, as well as the player, played by Michael Ward, and the tragedians. The courtiers, portrayed by Kieran Madden and Chris Bedford respectively, are caught in the wings of the original Hamlet plot, driving the play's narrative with their futile actions. Director Terry Atkinson, Abingdon Drama Club's chairman and one of its most active members, said, "I love both the main characters. Guildenstern is the cynic, whereas Rosencrantz is more innocent and wider-eyed about the world." He added, "It's a cracking idea to create a play out of two very minor characters in Hamlet. I love the surrealist humour brought by Stoppard. It's a fast-paced show with, in my opinion, some of the best dialogue ever put on a stage." Tickets are for sale, priced at £12, with concessions at £10 for seniors, children under 12, students and Abingdon Drama Club members. Group tickets for 10 or more people are priced at £10 each. They are available at the bookstore, the Abingdon Precinct, or via the Drama Club's website. The first staging of the play was produced at the Edinburgh Festival Fringe in 1966.
Free Easter Trail is laid on at a garden centre. A garden centre has launched a free Easter trail for families to enjoy during the holidays. The activity, running daily at Notcutts, Oxford in Newnham Courtney until Sunday the 7th of April, will have children hunting for clues hidden across the garden centre. After discovering all the clues, the children can participate in a prize draw for a tempting prize bundle. Alex Harding, centre manager at Notcutts Oxford Centre, said, "We're excited to offer families a simple, free and enjoyable Easter activity at Notcutts during the school holiday. Our Easter Trail provides an opportunity for children to have fun outdoors, exploring the garden centre, and to be in with a chance of winning a fabulous prize bundle. In addition to the Easter Trail, the garden centre is brimming with fresh plant varieties to spark inspiration for gardening in the upcoming warmer months. Shoppers will also find an assortment of homeware, garden furniture and gifts. The on-site restaurant will also offer Easter goodies. The daily activities will start from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. at the Garden Centre in Newnham Courtney, Oxfordshire. That's the last news item for this week. We thank all the local newspapers for the items we've used and thank editor, technicians, readers and helpers for their time. If you have any comments to make on this production, please phone the Dawn secretary, Karen, on 07939 265 517. We hope you've enjoyed listening to the newspaper, and remember, there are extra items from the RNIB at the end of the recording. You don't have to listen to all of these, but can skip to any that interest you. Please put the memory stick back in the pouch and post back to us ready for next week. If you're returning more than one memory stick, please put each one in a separate pouch.